You're listening to a recording from the Open Society Institute, working to build vibrant and tolerant democracies worldwide. Visit us at soros.org.
First of all, thank you all very much for coming. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Michael Hall, and I'm the Regional Director for Caucasus in Central Asia here at the Open Society Institute. We've entitled this event, Azerbaijan, Basic Freedoms Under Attack. And the reason that we've chosen that title and chosen indeed to have to host this event is because of what seems to be a very disturbing trend, which is becoming increasingly evident in Azerbaijan, namely that the space for independent activity in a variety of fields seems to be shrinking very rapidly across the board. This is a process which has been ongoing, I think, for a number of years, but there have been a few recent developments which are particularly troubling and point to perhaps some new dynamics in this trend, which we can discuss today. One example, which I'm sure most, if not all of you, are familiar with, is the recent attempt in Parliament in Azerbaijan to introduce legislation which would have, if it had passed, severely restricted the activity of non-governmental organizations. Now, although a law was ultimately passed applying to NGOs, it was done so without some of the more restrictive clauses, and this happened after a very intensive and heated international campaign, as well as thanks to efforts by civil society activists within Azerbaijan as well. The picture across the board is rather troubling, and the NGO law is just one recent example. But I think it's safe to say that these trends are nowhere more evident than they are in the sphere of freedom of speech and the media. And it is to this particular issue that I think we'll be devoting the bulk of our conversation this evening. The situation for media in Azerbaijan has always been, to put it very mildly, challenging. According to the reporters Sans Frontières, Azerbaijan is ranked 150th out of 173 countries in the world on its latest press freedom index. Libel is still treated as a criminal offense, and the penalties for it can be extremely high, including exorbitant fines and up to 3 years in prison. There have been a number of instances of intimidation, harassment, and physical violence against journalists over the years, including imprisonment of journalists. In fact, recently, the International Press Institute, I think, has called Azerbaijan Europe's worst jailer of journalists. Recently, on late December, in fact, December 31st of last year, new legislation was passed which essentially banned the activities of international radio broadcasters from broadcasting, banned them from broadcasting within the territory of Azerbaijan. As if all this weren't bad enough, we have a particularly disturbing case, and in fact the case which is the reason that we're holding this particular event when we are, I think it's safe to say, and that is the charges which have been brought very recently against two young activists, Emin Meli and Adnan Hajizadeh, who, as I think most of you know, were arrested last July after having been themselves assaulted in Baku and now face charges of hooliganism. So overall, the picture is quite disturbing. To help us perhaps explore these issues further and I think and hopefully address possible ways of finding new spheres of activity and ways of preserving some space for independent activity, we're very fortunate to have with us three guests who've come all the way, been kind enough to come all the way from Baku. So starting perhaps at the end of the table is Mr. Mehman Aliyev, who is the director of the Turan Information Agency, the first independent news agency which was created in post-Soviet space, a gentleman with a great deal of experience in the field of journalism. Who's agreed to speak to us on the situation of the media and of freedom of speech in Azerbaijan in general to provide some context to frame the discussion. Seated next to Mehman is Khadija Ismailova, who is the bureau chief for the Baku Bureau of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Azerbaijani service, and will be speaking today on some of the implications of the restrictions of foreign broadcasting in Azerbaijan, and the implications of that for access to alternative sources of information. And finally, seated immediately to my right is Shaheen Abbasov, who's the Deputy Chief of Party at the IREX USAID Media Advancement Project in Azerbaijan, also an individual, as is Khadija, with considerable experience in journalism going back many years. And he's agreed to speak to us first on the case of Emin Meli and Adnan Hajizadeh, to provide us with some context and some updates, but also to talk a little bit about the opportunities for alternative media in Azerbaijan. So I've asked our participants to speak for about 15 or 20 minutes each, hoping that it'll be more towards the 15-minute end of the spectrum to allow time for a fuller conversation, at which point we will open the floor for comments and questions. So I think with that, I would turn the floor over to Mehman Aliyev.
Я приветствую вас. Спасибо, что вы пришли нас
послушать.
Я думаю, что было бы правильно рассматривать нынешний вектор внутренней политики, ситуации в Азербайджане, с предстоящих в Азербайджане муниципальных и парламентских выборах. Дело в том, что муниципальные выборы у нас наступают, значит, будут проведены в декабре этого года. А парламентские в следующем году. Если учесть, что в Азербайджане существует авторитарный режим, для которого контроль над политической властью является достаточно важным.
If you think
вопросом,
that the authoritarian regime that exists in Azerbaijan and the control of the situation is very important for that regime,
you think about it. И в этом смысле борьба за выбор на выборах, которые, так сказать, в Азербайджане наступают через, скажем, приблизительно 2 года, 3 года, это то президентские выборы или парламентские выборы, муниципальные выборы.
I'm thinking about the struggle between the forces that are on the arena when the elections are due to happen.
И обычно нападки на гражданское общество, на средства массовой информации, на политические партии, на представителей неправительственных организаций, они вот приходятся как раз накануне подобного рода событий.
So assaults on the non-governmental organizations, on all independent organizations, they are normally happen during this period.
И я думаю, что дело блогеров, оно возникло не случайно сегодня.
I think it's not incident, it's not an accident that the issue with bloggers happened this time.
И я считаю, что совсем не случайно недавно власти вновь, значит, возбудили уголовное дело по событиям 93 года, когда в Гендже был поднят военный мятеж против правительства Эльчибея.
So I think it's not strange that the event of the 1993 happened this time when. Что случилось?
Значит, власти недавно возбудили вновь уголовное дело по событиям мятежа 93 года.
So the criminal suit was raised again on those events of military coup d'état in 1993 in Azerbaijan.
Пока что дело против бывшего генерального прокурора Азербайджана.
The suit against the former general procurator of Azerbaijan.
Но косвенно можно понимать, что это может быть направлено и против других представителей лидеров оппозиции.
Indirectly, we can think that it should be against of the other representatives of leaders of opposition.
Которые тогда входили в руководство Азербайджана.
Who were among the leaders of Azerbaijan in those times?
И могут появиться другие новые какие-то формы давления.
Other forms of suppression could show up again, should appear in addition
to
that.
То есть власть демонстрирует силу и хочет показать, что она не собирается уступать и она не позволит оппозиции оспаривать с ней вопрос власти на этих выборах.
In another thing, we see that the government, the regime is not going to set back and want to struggle against the independent leaders of opposition this time.
Последние события развиваются на таком фоне.
The recent events are as follows.
Ильхам Алиев за последние 5-6 лет, к с того, как он стал президентом Азербайджана.
For the last five, six years, when Ilham Aliyev became the leader of Azerbaijan,
он достаточно усилился.
He empowered himself.
Большая проблема, конечно, для него была, исходила больше всего не со стороны классической политической оппозиции, которую мы имеем в виду.
The huge problem for him was not from the side of the classic political opposition.
А внутренняя оппозиция.
But inner opposition in the country.
То есть, самой власти.
The opposition inside of the power.
Так называемая команда его бывшего, бывшая команда его отца.
The former crew of his father.
И последнее время достаточно он, скажем так, достаточно сильно усилил позиции, и министры, олигархи, которые, так скажем, достаточно сильно влияли на политическую ситуацию в стране.
And oligarchs who influenced the inner situation in the country.
И они достаточно ослаблены.
They are weakened now.
Можно сказать, что сегодня все важные решения принимает он сам.
You can say that all main important decisions he makes in the country.
И даже такие дела, как блогеров и возбуждение уголовного дела, там, скажем, против по событиям 93-го года.
And criminal suits about 1993.
Обязательно, естественно, это его решение.
Are mandatory his decisions.
Политическая оппозиция, классическая политическая оппозиция, она достаточно ослаблена в Азербайджане.
Classic political opposition is weakened in Azerbaijan.
Практически мы не видим никакой активности со стороны партии Мусават, Народного фронта.
Practically we don't see any opposition from Musavat party and party of People's Front and other parties in addition to them.
Это связано с тем, что всегда перманентно возникали какие-то уголовные дела.
It's due to the fact that permanently some criminal suits would show up.
Физическое насилие,
physical assault, provocations
против оппозиции,
against opposition.
И в конечном итоге в последние годы властям удалось достаточно сильно нейтрализовать оппозицию и загнать ее в угол.
And in the long run, the regime managed to get the opposition into the corner.
Неправительственные организации в Азербайджане тоже достаточно ослабли.
NGOs are weakened.
Скажем,
in Azerbaijan,
лидеры не гражданского движения, скажем, такие организации, которые правозащитные организации.
Leaders of the national movements, human rights organizations.
Даже их дело, если возьмем дело блогеров, их активность вот в этом вопросе была достаточно слабой.
If you take the bloggers' activity, their activity was quite weakened.
Правительство несколько лет назад создало специальный, значит, при президенте специальный фонд, который занимается финансированием различных проектов.
Several years ago, the government arranged the fund that is financing different projects in the country.
Создаются различного рода, так называется, гонго НГО, очень большое количество.
Какие?
Гонго, то есть,
government
так называемые.
Governmental organized NGOs are also being formed up.
Но они тоже практически просто занимаются отмыванием денег, я так
But
считаю.
Practically they're just money laundering things.
Даже
I think.
Тот же самый правительственный фонд вынужден был признать, что эффективность этих организаций практически нулевая.
Had to admit that the efficiency of this organization is close to zero.
Даже было проведено определенное совещание, где участвовали представители медиа, где от нас спросили, чтобы мы как-то помогали позиционировать. Но это тоже кризис.
But it's crisis.
Медиа практически можно сказать, что за последние 10 лет эта политика началась с 98 года.
Beginning 1998, for the past 10 years, media.
Позиция подавления независимых медиа в Азербайджане.
The position of suppressing the independent media in Azerbaijan.
Оно осуществлялось по трем основным направлениям.
Was going in three main directions.
Экономические подавления.
Economical suppression.
Физические
physical suppression,
судебные,
court and law suppression,
и подкуп,
and bribery.
Да, в конечном итоге, то есть у человека остается выбор.
In the long run,
принять эти три варианта,
a man
так сказать,
has either three of these variants,
или же получить деньги,
or get the money.
Ну, к сожалению, несмотря на то, что часть прессы все-таки пыталась сопротивляться.
Unfortunately, part of the media tried to resist.
Организовывать разные формы борьбы,
сопротивления. Forms of, opposition.
Но в конечном итоге мы сегодня имеем такую ситуацию, когда в Азербайджане практически нет независимых СМИ.
In the long run, we have the situation that in Azerbaijan we don't have mass media.
Если говорить о телеканалах, они 8 телеканалов,
channels,
они полностью под контролем.
Channels are under control of the government.
Газеты, приблизительно,
newspapers,
скажем, веб-сайты и так
and
далее.
And websites.
Где-то примерно 99%.
99% under control of the government.
Радиостанции, такие как «Голос Америки»,
«Азадуик»
и BBC, они практически были блокированы на волнах
FM waves,
и были лишены, так сказать, к ним был лишен доступ аудитории.
And audience was deprived of access to these radio stations.
То есть в настоящее время, если мы будем говорить о нашем обществе,
currently we speak about our society,
оно, конечно, находится под тотальным контролем,
it's under total control of the government,
и политическим,
under economical,
и
political,
информационным,
and informational control.
Я бы хотел отметить, что
I would like to know that
ситуация в стране сегодня такова, что
the situation in the country is,
решения в основном принимаются,
all decisions are mainly made by,
практически эмоционально.
Practically on emotional basis.
То есть мы не видим никаких программ, никаких,
in other
скажем,
words, we don't see any programs,
проектов,
projects,
которые бы были бы направлены
would
на развитие общества
the
в тех или иных направлениях.
In different, directions.
Они носят больше декларативных. То, что есть, это больше декларативные проекты.
They are mainly declarations.
И сегодня, так сказать, в годы кризиса,
and
экономического
кризиса,
практически мы не видим действий правительства по антикризисным действиям правительства по управлению ситуацией.
Practically don't see any governmental anti-crisis decisions on these directions.
И кризис действительно есть в Азербайджане.
And we do have a crisis in Azerbaijan. It's quite serious.
Все показатели, которые мы имеем,
all
любые,
marks that we have
по любым секторам.
In any sectors, they are very bad.
И, но правительство почему-то скрывает это, так сказать, об этом ничего не говорят. Более того, президент всегда говорит о том, что по сравнению, скажем, с Соединенными Штатами или там, с Германией,
ситуация лучше.
В целом, я бы еще хотел бы отметить, в целом, если говорить об обществе, достаточно пассивное.
The society is quite passive.
Недовольных состоянием, то есть, в стране достаточно много. Это реальность.
Too many people that are against of the situation in the country, this is reality.
Но многие люди выбирают все-таки какой-то пассивный такой форм.
But many of them just choose the passive form of resistance.
Ну, например, они
example,
не смотрят уже немало людей, которые не смотрят телепрограммы
местных TV stations.
Или не читают газеты.
Or they don't read the newspapers.
Они больше смотрят зарубежные телеканалы или читают зарубежные медиа,
channels,
интернет и так далее.
Media or internet sources.
Они могут говорить у себя на кухне, обсуждать эти вопросы, выражать недовольство. Но общество достаточно
пассивное.
И власти достаточно понимают эту ситуацию.
And authorities are quite in the know, they understand the situation.
И постоянно прессингуют.
And always press the situation.
И вот я опять возвращаюсь, что дело блогеров.
Again, let me come back to the bloggers issue.
Это одна из форм прессинга.
One of the forms of the pressure in the society.
То есть власть демонстрирует, что она будет делать то, что как она хочет.
Authorities demonstrate that
мысли в Азербайджане.
And no freedom of expression.
Никаких независимых действий.
In Azerbaijan, no independent actions will be allowed in the country.
То есть общество находится, живет сегодня в Азербайджане в состоянии прессинга, в состоянии
the society in Azerbaijan lives under constant pressure,
подавления и прав, и социальных, и политических,
social rights,
и экономических.
Political rights and economic rights.
Вот я вкратце хотел бы это
сказать. This is in a nutshell.
Спасибо.
Thank you very much.
So, I'm Khadija Ismailova. I'm Bureau Chief of Radio Liberty in Baku, so I'm leading a team of 25 journalists who are reporting from Azerbaijan to Azerbaijan and in Azerbaijan. And it's U.S. Congress-funded radio, and we are able to work thanks to U.S. taxpayers, but also the first thing I think is important to note is that there is no editorial. It doesn't impact or affect our work anyhow in editorial. So, but it does affect the way we do work. For example, if the journalist of the newspapers, Azadlik, it's the same word, liberty and Azadlik, it's the same word, so we are namesakes. The first independent newspaper in Azerbaijan, and it's opposition newspaper now. It's Azadlik, if Azadlik newspaper's correspondent is being stabbed or being just kidnapped and taken out of the city, and car just drives over the guy's feet. It happened in Azerbaijan. They scream about it. Everyone is screaming about it, but there is not much you can do about it. It's just a local journalist who is being oppressed, and then what happens later? The guy. Most of the opposition journalists have left the country or continued working with self-censorship, which is not the case with us, the namesakes. We are not that... The Radio Azadlik is enjoying the diplomatic support of the U.S. Embassy, so whenever my correspondent is arrested, I'm calling U.S. Embassy, and they come, and we are registered as U.S. journalists in the country. So it adds a little bit to our bravery. So if you have a question, if you will have a question, are we not afraid? Yes, we are, but not that much. Even though we have to say Azeri journalists working for Radio Liberty are also oppressed. In the beginning of 2008, the correspondent of Radio Azadlik in Nakhchivan, it's the exclave part of Azerbaijan, like which is even more oppressed than the mainland, is our correspondent in Nakhchivan was arrested for writing a letter to president and asking him how would he comment the situation in this place. And asking for answers to the what happening there, and it's been 3 years in a row. Every year, there is a case our correspondents in Nakhchivan report about jailing a person in the psychiatric hospital for being critical. Once it was an opposition activist who decided that bribery is not something he wants to put up with. He just started complaining about it. Next time it was, and he was 78 years old. And they put the guy to the psychiatric hospital in 2007. In the beginning of 2008, I believe, another person, Ismail Huseynov, he was arrested as well. He was arrested as well for when he protested arrest of his son, illegal arrest of his son. His son, he was arrested, and nobody actually understood why the young guy was arrested. It was a New Year holiday eve, and he got arrested, and then his parents protested that. They wrote complaint letters, and the protester had been arrested in the postal office when he was trying to post his letter to the presidential administration. and he was taken to the psychiatric hospital. And the third one is a recent case, and it's still unclear when the authorities in Nakhchivan are going to release the guy, is Mahamat Gurbanov, also the resident of Nakhchivan. He was also, he's taken to the psychiatric hospital for protesting bribery in the customs custom point between Azerbaijan and Turkey. So he's still there. So this is what Radio Liberty is reporting about. And this is what makes, basically, international headlines about Azerbaijan. Apart from the news about economic development, about how the country became top reformer in doing business and so on, the news that basically the experts, economic experts we are interviewing, are find difficult to understand where they are taken from, but what they are based on. But anyways, there are headlines about oil output, about geographic location, strategic geographic location, how important the country is in the war with terror, how important it is to have Azeri gas to Europe. And then it comes like Azeri government is jailing someone in psychiatric hospital for protesting something. Not very nice. Then in 1998, so Mr. Aliyev told you about how they silenced first political parties, then non-governmental organizations by buying them out or by just suppressing them. And journalists, also local journalists, they are also oppressed. And there is Radio Liberty nagging about falsified elections all the time. Oh, not nice. Not very nice. And in 1998, Radio Liberty was the sole source, the sole news organization that reported about carousels. It's just busing people to the elections, falsifications in numbers, and in the fact we revealed that there is no debate and there is no election process actually going on, because there is a candidate from ruling party and there are other candidates who are just puppets. They are there to serve as candidates. So everybody would call these elections elections. So the rest of the world did. OSCE, they had their own criticism about the elections, but nobody spoke up, basically. There was no much international noise about false elections in the country. There was only Radio Liberty speaking about making international headlines and reporting. And I'm not sure which part of our activity was more annoying for them, the one that comes in Azeri for Azeris or the one that goes in English for the rest of the world. Anyways, they were not happy with that. So what they did after presidential elections, they announced that they are going to shut it down on FM. So a local audience wouldn't get our signals. By that time, the statistics we had was based on the sociological survey, was that 12% of the all radio listeners in the country listens just to Radio Azadli. So they don't listen anything else. It's just Radio Azadli. So it was news programs were the most popular news programs, and talk shows, most popular talk shows. So you could drive in Baku and listen to Radio Azadli voices coming from taxis, from cars, and it's not an exaggeration. It was the most popular radio station. So they decided to stop that bazaar. They said they are going to shut it down. Why? What did they say? They said they are going to nationalize the frequencies. So they don't want any foreign organization to use FM, to use national frequencies, because they are for nationalization of national frequencies. They referred to the law that had been actually passed on 2006, and we got our FM frequency year after this law passed. So somehow they violated this law when they gave this frequency to us, but legal experts, they say no, they didn't, because the law doesn't require, doesn't say strictly that foreign organization cannot use frequencies. It says they can apply for it and they can get it. So if you can apply and get it, so it's absolutely legal. I think that's what logic says. But not their logic, probably. So what they did, they in December, they decided, and there were like a couple days between two decisions. They decided about shutting down Radio Liberty, Voice of America, and BBC on FM, on national frequencies. And another decision they made was about holding a referendum, conducting a referendum on which would take a limit from presidency terms. So the current president could run as many times as he wants. So another election, like voting process is coming, and there is no more Radio Liberty on the air, because they did what they intended to, and since January 1st, we are no more in local frequency. But we still air through shortwave, internet, and satellite. So what we did, we decided to turn challenges into opportunities, and we switched to the multimedia. Since we are mostly doing internet work, why don't we do more video, more photos, and so on? So March 18th referendum was even more bizarre for the government. Radio Liberty provided photo and video proofs of falsifications. We showed the buses that would take students from polling station to polling station. We had a video of the video interview with the person who said it's her duty today to bring 100 people to the election, to the polling station, so they could vote. And there was a video clip of a woman who just votes three times, like once, second time, and third time, and that was normal. Nobody cares about camera shooting it or people reporting it. They are happy to say that I am here, I'm part of the falsification system. That is the most interesting part. It's they somehow built a system where many people feel a part of this system, and they earn some money on that, and they feel free to say, yes, I am violating this law. Yes, I am participating in falsification, because that is what the government likes, and that is what I will be rewarded for. No shame at all. No. So that's the most I think disappointing part of the work we are doing. And then so what we are doing now is we are trying to cover as big an audience as possible through the internet and satellite connection. The bigger numbers are growing, and it adds to our hopes. However, we had some help from some people. There is a listener who would always annoy us with his phone calls, like who would call. It's one of the examples. He would call me personally, me 5 times a day, and another 5 times each of our employees, who would always comment on the programs we had and say irrelevant things about things like that. Then he was deprived of his radio. What he did, there are community centers in the big, where there are big apartment buildings. They have some community centers inside so they can have their funerals there. He put a satellite dish on that. And he gathers community, the neighbors there, and they listen to radio all together. He still calls us. So, but the guy who was a pain, suddenly he became a hero, because he showed how the community can organize itself and work for the, and it actually turned challenge into opportunity, because they wouldn't get together for anything. So these are the rare examples, but still. And there was another case of the help from the community. It was the people like Emin Milli and Adnan Hajizadeh. When the government decided that it's going to shut down Radio Liberty, Emin Milli wrote me a letter, and he said that he's very upset about that. He was the one who believed that you still have to talk to the government, because they probably don't know the better, and you have to show them. So he was the one who was willing to talk to everyone, to participate in. He was like all inclusivity activist. He was participating in government events, and both the government and opposition. And then he made a statement. He made statements. He went to the Forum of Azerbaijani Students in Europe that was taking place in the Chamber of Lords in London, and he made a speech there, saying, "We need to pass the information further to the next generation. Maybe we will not succeed in changing anything in this country right now, but we need to pass the information to the next generation so they know that falsifying elections is not good. Busing people to the polling station is not good. Voting multiple times is not good. And shutting down Radio Liberty is not good as well." So that was a manifesto for change. He called his speech it, and he distributed it over the internet. He was quite active in internet networking by that time. He was leading the Yahoo group with 2,500 people and doing a lot to distribute information. But after Radio Liberty has been shut down, his role of information broker really grew. He started distributing news from our webpage to his Yahoo groups. He started this ANTV project that would deal with citizen journalism and and inspire people to send videos, and that actually increased interactivity of Radio Liberty with its listeners through Emin Milli. So I'm very upset that he's in prison now, because I think the citizens like MMLA are the ones the independent media relies on in its hard days. So this is what I wanted to tell. Thank you.
Thank you very much, first of all, for inviting us here and establishing this opportunity, and thanks for coming. Actually, first of all, what I want to start with is to say that I fully agree with previous two speakers. I mean, I share what they said. And after their quite detailed presentations, it's not much to talk, to add here, but I'll still try to add some information. So the recent case with attack to the freedom of speech and media in Azerbaijan, it's the case of arrest of eminent Emin Millian Adnan Hajzadeh. Hadija talked about that a bit. So what happened, I think most of you know, these guys were sitting at the restaurant in early July with their friends, and then they were attacked by two young people, sporty people, you know, they were beaten. Especially Emin Adnan Hajzadeh was beaten, injured seriously. Then they complained to the police, but arrested themselves on the contrary, and charged with hooliganism. And there were many things happening between that, because, I mean, they were refused to provide first aid to fix their injuries, etc. So, and now the court case began in September on 16. Yeah, it began. And the question now, whether they will be released or not, and I would say we don't know. We don't know what will happen, because there are different signals coming from the government. One signal show that they most likely will be released with a conditional term, so deprived of traveling and some freedom of movement, etc. Another signal shows that they maybe will be sentenced to up to 4 years in prison. Yeah. So we don't know that. And there are different, so let's see, I mean, next week, not in 2 weeks, there is another session of the court, and it will end soon. And another issue is why it happened, why they were arrested. And there are also various different versions of that. That one is say that they were arrested because this famous donkey video in YouTube, which now actually became much more popular, because I didn't watch this video, for example, before their arrest. After that, I did, because, I mean, they were at my email, there were like tens of emails with this YouTube link, etc. So I did, as many people did. So, I mean, one version is because of that, another version. But I think that regardless of the reason, what happened, it's, first of all, it's intolerable, of course, completely intolerable. And also it fits to all recent developments. It's kind of a logical continuation of all recent developments, which started, as Mehman and Khadija said, with taking foreign radios out of FM frequencies broadcasting, then with the referendum, then with changes to media law legislation, this attempt to change NGO legislation. So it's logical what happens. And why it happened? Because after Radio Azadlıq was closed down, and Khadija is right, because Azadlıq Radio was really popular among ordinary population, with all TV channels under control, and we just with Turan News Agency, which is just for their subscribers mostly, but not for general public, with more or less okay more or less interesting DAS Partal being taken from their original owner and manager, and now there is former KGB guy who is leading that, and it changed its content completely. They ask, and with such situation, Radio Azadlık was very popular and kind of sole source for normal unbiased professional good quality information for people in Azerbaijan. Yeah, and actually it affected me very seriously when the radio was closed down. It says, you know, in Russian, если ты не занимаешься политикой, политика займется тобой. I mean, if you are not involved in the politics, finally politics will involve you itself, you know. And it happened with me, for example. I was on vacations with my wife at New Year's vacations, and in my car, we had like two frequencies always in air. I was listening Radio Liberty and BBC, and my wife was listening another music, more entertainment, Russian radio, Europa Plus. And when we returned from vacation, suddenly neither BBC nor Liberty and Europa Plus were all taken from FM, you know, and I personally was very touched by that, you know. But after that, people like Emin Milli and Adnan Hajzadeh, who were very active in this alternative media, let's say, in flash mob, Facebook, etc., they became such source for young people, for active who are looking for information, who were looking for information, etc. So the government decided to intimidate this growing mass of people, active people online, and put these guys into prison to intimidate and to show that we can control this area as well. I mean, well, did it help? No, because first of all, I personally was very surprised how active the youth became in protesting this arrest. For example, the youth, young people, students organized several protests in New York, in Amsterdam, London, other cities. They are very active in Baku, still online, and there are stickers throughout the city, etc. So campaign is quite serious. And I think the government did not expect such reaction. They expected that it will kind of intimidate young people who were never active. I mean, they're never was kind of part of traditional opposition fighters, etc., but it didn't. Also, it fits to, to election cycles in Azerbaijan, which Mehman Aliyev touched about. Closer to any important elections in Azerbaijan, something like that happens. For example, before 2005 parliamentary elections, but pro-opposition kind of youth organizations, and after PARA organization or KMARA in Georgia played important role in their revolutions, several such organizations were established in Azerbaijan. And they were becoming more and more popular. And finally, what happened, like a few months before the election, the government arrested, again, it was provocation against youth activist Ruslan Basherli, and who is still in prison. He was arrested and sentenced to, I don't remember how many, but 6 or 8 years in prison for allegedly meeting with Armenian and taking money from Armenian in Georgia, etc. So, but it was provocation, of course. And it kind of was directed to intimidate that youth, pro-opposition youth organizations. And now we are getting closer to 2010 parliamentary elections. So the government did that with Emin and Adnan to keep these youth, newly, you know, established, appearing, emerging youth, which are not connected to political parties, to opposition, but very active and kind of ready to demand access to free information, to defend their rights, and to express themselves freely against election falsifications, against corruption, and other negative issues which are widespread in Azerbaijan. So, but again, what is interesting about this, and I think the government is very upset that The case of Emin and Adnan Milli, Emin Milli and Adnan Hajizadeh involves, you know, the new group, new wave kind of young people in Azerbaijan who are mostly like, you know, well-educated, Western-educated, or educated, but, you know, who wants to be active. They never were active in the country, and the government never saw them as a threat for them. But now it shows that, you know, and Emin was quite good leader of this group, organizing, you know, networking them. And as Khadija said, there were more than 2,000 people in his flash, in his Yahoo group, etc. So let's see what will happen. But regardless of the sentence passed by the court, and whatever sentence will be passed by the court, you should know that it will not be judge's decision. Because legal system in Azerbaijan is completely under the government control, and we don't trust to the court system's independence, and it will be political decision. So regardless what will happen, whether they will be released or sentenced, it will be political decision of the government about them. Let's see. It's just a few weeks to wait for the decision for the sentence to them. This case takes me to the issue of alternative media, which I was asked to talk about. As you see, alternative media in current condition in Azerbaijan becoming the very important source of information. There are also serious problems. And first problem is that, yes, internet use of internet is becoming more and more popular and wider in Azerbaijan. Now, it's according to our statistic, it's over 1 million people who are using internet. But another statistic shows that, according to statistic, more than 90%, but I think it's about 80% are still using internet via dial-up, you know, which is unserious and which restricts seriously their ability to use this, to read alternative media, etc. So it's one of the challenges. But still, alternative media is very important for active young people who are now emerging as a, and in the future they will be kind of political force, I think. For them, it's незаменимо, как сказать. Irreplaceable source of information. They can use it. Even like Radio Azadlık moved to alternative ways of reporting, and as we see, their audience is growing. So it shows that alternative media.
You can join our Facebook page.
Yeah, the Facebook page, etc. So alternative media is very important source of information for young people who want to follow news, be active, etc. And there is challenge, of course, here again. And the challenge is that in June, just before the arrest, in June, the head of the regulating body, National Television and Radio Council of Azerbaijan, which regulates, which actually took them from air, in Azerbaijan, he said that they are now considering the issue of licensing and regulating the internet media, internet radios, internet televisions, etc. And it was it led to protests of local civil society groups, opposition, and internationally to international criticism. And then Minister of Communication said that no, I mean, he disavowed these words, that no, they are not going to control internet as media, but still this issue on the agenda, and it could happen at any time, as the government...
Kazakhstan,
especially after Kazakhstan passed such legislation, which made internet media equal to regulation as traditional media. So it could happen in Azerbaijan, as I think the government at any time could return to the issue of NGO law again. So there is a threat to alternative media. But still, it's developing, and it's very important to kind of tool of information for people in Azerbaijan. And I'm happy to say that donor organizations like USAID, OSI, and others, they understand that, and for them now it's kind of priority to develop alternative media, citizen journalism in Azerbaijan, etc. And just summarizing time? Ah, okay. Just to summarize what we all were saying about, I would say that I want to say that just there are now four major threats to media in Azerbaijan, to journalists and to media in Azerbaijan. And first one is lack of independent judiciary. Any media, any journalist could be closed down or put to prison, etc. Thanks to controlled judiciary in Azerbaijan, and it happened many times, it will happen. Sometimes the government did not wait for court decision, as it happened with Radio Liberty or closure of INS private television channel in 2007. They did that even without court decision. Second one is, as Mehman touched, it's lack of economic freedom in the country, which puts independent media into a very vulnerable situation of hunger for money and established economic difficulties for media, for independent media. Third one is that the government used provocations against journalists, and at any time, I mean, any journalist could be beaten up, could be put to prison under alleged and political reasons, as it happened with editor of Azadlık newspaper, Ganimat Zahid, and other people. And first one, even violence could be used against journalists. And you know that in 2005, the journalist was killed in Azerbaijan for the first time. And many journalists since that time were suffered from direct violence. And in no cases of the 0% of when people who attacked them or injured them were, punished for that. So that's four major threats in the country to the freedom of media. So thank you very much for your attention.
Okay.
Oh, sure.
We told about bad news mostly, so I wanted to add some good news to the thing. So good news, part of the good news, that all the people who have never used internet are now becoming familiar with internet because they want to listen to radio. It's one good news. And second, the court trial of Mimili and Adnan Hajizadeh is also paving a way for new ways of reporting. It's like the court, the judge decided that there should be no audio recording in the court hearing, and hearings are conducted mostly in the evening, so it's you are always late to report to the main radio show or when the working hours are over, when the hearing is over. So what people do, and you cannot record, you cannot use your phone, you cannot do anything. You cannot go out and report to your media from half hearing. So what people do, they are Twittering from the court room. So these are the good news. There are new technologies coming to the old bastions of the government. So the court, the guards in the court, they know nothing about the Twitter, and they don't understand what is going on. And they probably they wonder where the information comes out. But what we do, Radio Liberty is also report. Our correspondents are also reporting from court room by Twitter. So that's the way to do that. It's like when you are restricted, and you have to find ways to do things. And one more thing, it's like I met today our foreign minister. That's a good news too, because I told him about that. There he was. He didn't like that question. I mean, first I commented. I said like, it's nice to see him because our interview request is pending since a year ago. He was complaining about the quality of media. He said, I'm always being criticized there. Actually, I think he, like, media is quite nice to him. But anyways, we rarely have chance to hear from him about his side, his point of view. So we're quite nice to him. Anyways, so I saw him today, and I was very happy about that. He was commenting on the issue, and he said, let's see. He said the independence of the court is guaranteed by our constitution, and that is what will happen with this trial as well. Well, let's believe. And also regarding the interviews, when they said that they are going to nationalize the local frequencies, there was a hope that local TV channels or the local media will grow up and they will pay more attention to local means of information. That didn't happen. Actually, I can say this is one of the interesting facts and statistics about our country. The president of Azerbaijan have never been interviewed by local news organization. All our requests had been denied. So he had never been interviewed by Azeri journalist. He gives interviews to foreign agencies, but never to local ones. So it somehow shows how sincere they are in their attempts to nationalize the media market and do it. So that's it.
Thank you very much, Khadija Khanum, and to all the presenters for three very, I think, safe to say, rich presentations. I think there's a great deal to talk about. So again, in the interest of time, I'd like to open this up to comments or questions from the floor. So the microphone is open. I would ask anybody coming forward with comments or questions to say who you are and also where you're from. So.
Okay, yes. Hi, my name is Muzaffar Suleymanov. I work for the Committee to Protect Journalists, Europe and Central Asia program, and we cover many of your cases, especially Azad Lik Radio in Nakhchivan. I personally interviewed you guys when the things started folding out there. My question is regarding imprisoned journalists, Ganymed Zahidov, Einullah Fatullayev, Mushfiq Husseinov. I don't remember if you have any others at the moment.
Yeah,
but yeah, as far as we know, Einullah's case has been brought to the European Court for Human Rights, and hopefully there will be some sort of result coming from them. What are the prospects, do you think, of his release, given that the court rules to let him out? Если нужно, я переведу. Мой вопрос касается судьбы арестованных журналистов. Инули Фатулаева в первую очередь. Его дело было, насколько нам известно, было отправлено в Европейский суд по правам человека. И если Европейский суд примет быстрое решение, как вы думаете, как отреагирует азербайджанские власти, выпустят ли они его или нет? И что вы думаете о судьбе остальных журналистов? Спасибо.
Ну, во-первых, я не думаю, что Европейский суд так быстро на что-то отреагирует.
First of all, I don't think that European court will react too fast on that.
Мы ожидали, что какое-то решение будет в сентябре.
Some decision will be in September.
Но этого решения пока нет.
But it didn't come out.
Решения, которые выносились, в частности, по у нас не было по журналистам, были по политическим
деятелям, on journalists, but about the opposition leaders.
Но власти, так сказать, пытаются их оспаривать.
But authorities try to
идет переписка.
To speak about them, we have letter exchanges.
Исполнение решений Европейского суда.
European court.
У нас, как показывает практика, на
as practice shows,
быстро не происходит.
It doesn't happen fast.
То есть власти пытаются
in other words,
максимально
authorities try to maximally
решений.
Pull out the decision on those.
Дело, скажем, Сардара, значит, фамилия как? Да, Сардар Джалалоглу, скажем.
The decision about this journalist in particular.
Я думаю, что все-таки
I think that,
в ближайшем будущем
in close future,
мы не увидим положительных решений,
которые
бы привели к освобождению находящихся в заключении журналистов.
That will lead to letting free those journalists that are imprisoned now.
По крайней мере, вот мое личное наблюдение
показывает,
что международное сообщество,
international community,
недостаточно оказывает внимание этой проблеме.
Doesn't give enough attention to these problems in Azerbaijan.
То есть для них, скажем, больше важно
what's more important
выстраивать сотрудничество
is to build relations with Azerbaijan
в плане больших энергетических проектов.
On energetic projects.
Или в плане больших политических проектов, таких как партнерство
as partnership
во имя мира НАТО или
For the sake of the world
восточное партнерство,
NATO,
которое недавно
Eastern
принято.
Partnership that was came but that was put into into effect in recent times.
Здесь используется тактика.
So what we're talking about is about the
эволюционного
tactics of evolutional change
ситуации
of
в Азербайджане,
Azerbaijan,
сотрудничество с режимом,
cooperation with the regime,
во имя того, что когда-то что-то поменяется.
For the sake that someday, somehow, some things will change.
То есть каких-либо серьезных шагов и
any serious steps
серьезной
and
поддержки
moves and support,
я, честно говоря, никогда не видел.
I am in particular will never see.
И недавно, когда был у нас Харшти,
recently,
представитель ОБСЕ по
ОСЕ representative Mr. Харшти visited us.
И меня брали комментарии накануне его
and
визита.
And commentary
что вы ожидаете
and
от его визита? Будет ли какие
visit,
положительные изменения,
in particular with bloggers?
Я сказал, что Харшти всегда пытался что-то сделать.
Харшти always tried to do something.
Но, к сожалению, он не пользовался достаточной поддержкой своего руководства.
He didn't have enough support from his authorities.
И маловероятно, что его
and
визит
it is unlikely that his visit ever change anything.
И Харшти мне сказал,
and Харшти
когда
said
мы
to me,
увиделись
when we saw each other,
во время его визита в Баку,
during his visit to Baku,
что я читал ваш
that
комментарий
I read your commentary
визите.
About my visit.
Да, но в какой-то степени
but
он не был удивлен,
in
конечно.
Some way, he was not surprised.
Но он, я думаю, что он
but I think that
правильно
he,
понял мои
understood
замечания.
Me correctly. My commentary is correctly.
I actually want to comment on that as well. Because it takes so long, we don't have a practice of implementation of European courts decisions like in term of release of the prisoners. Because by the time the decision was made, the prisoner would be released either to finish his time in the prison or pardoned under the pressure of the other international organizations. But it takes at least like 2-3 years and it's really too much bureaucracy about that. And they are now considering in Council of Europe and to change, to amend something in their legislation so the government would be kept responsible for responding in a timely manner, but that didn't happen yet. And because it takes so long, it's really the government actually implements the decision in part of the financial fees. So they pay compensations. For example, they paid 10,000 euros to the political leader who had been tortured in the prison, and they paid 20,000 euros to the woman who had whose eye had been actually she lost her eye because of the police violence in the rally. So I don't know how much this 20,000 euros will help her to come to recover from the from all these years of the trials and all the and actually the damage. But this is what happened. So there is a hope on European court, but not that much. So the hope is not on the. Let's wait what will happen. Probably Einola has more chance to see what European court will come up with, because he has the longer sentence. He has like 8 years. Maybe within these 8 years there will be some decisions.
Thank you. My name is Anthony Richter. I'm with the Open Society Institute. I'm also a board member of something called the Extractive Industries Transparency Initiative, and I'll be visiting your country in the next 3 weeks. And my question has to do a little bit, some of you refer to the questions about energy projects and international oil deals and so on. And I was wondering if you're familiar with EITI in Russian, it's called IPDO, the extent to which you feel that civil society is free to express its views about questions relating to the transparency of natural resource business in Azerbaijan, and also, since the subject this evening is about the media, whether the media, what kind of reportage the media gives about these questions and where the red lines are placed with respect to discussing these issues, in particular this EITI.
I will just ask Mehman Aliyev to speak about oil and transparency, because the latest investigation was made by the Tehran agency about the how the oil money are being actually stolen. And the what I will just add, it's since the EITI became the government agreed to participate in the EITI, did it become more transparent? I don't think so, because it became more sophisticated, so it's actually difficult to deal with in terms of the journalism. With the data, and it's what is interesting. It's not going to be transparent enough unless there will be transparency on expenditures. So we know how much money is coming to budget, but we don't know how effectively it's being spent. We know. So we know that they are spending zillions to the refugee projects and I don't know the infrastructure projects, and but there is no transparency over those expenditures.
But yeah, Khadija is right. But what I want to add, that fortunately we do have a strong coalition of NGOs in the country, by the way, supported strongly by OSI Azerbaijan. It's called, there are two actually names for that. First of all, it's EITI Coalition, which monitors the EITI issue. But second one, which is even more important, it's called National Budget Group. It's coalition of NGOs, and fortunately, it is a really strong organization which with very competent people inside, economists, economic experts, independent economic experts, who are seriously monitoring how the government spend this oil money and revenues and making strong reports on that. So fortunately, we do have it. And we all have information, actually, that the government is actually very unhappy. And actually, this organization, National Budget Group, I expect, would be the first target of the government attack if this NGO law would, amendments would be passed. Because the government is not so much care about like human rights organizations or media freedom organizations, NGOs, etc., but they hate them, National Budget Group, because they are kind of counting and showing them how much was stolen, etc. So that's what I want to add to what Hadi just said.
Проект прозрачности, о котором мы говорим, он же касается только того, что касается тех средств, которые поступают в нефтяной фонд Азербайджана.
It's all about the money that gets into the oil fund of Azerbaijan.
То есть речь идет о том, что правительство практически, да, нефтяной фонд отчитывается, сколько денег поступило в нефтяной фонд.
Yes, oil fund has statements how money came to the fund.
Сколько нефтяной фонд заработал?
How much money the oil fund spent and got as revenues?
Но что интересно?
But what's interesting?
Азербайджан практически с конца прошлого года.
Azerbaijan since the last year, practically.
В части прибыльной нефти, о которой мы говорим.
In terms of part of the profitable oil.
Стал получать 80% от того, что производит международный консорциум.
Started getting 80% of what the international consortium got.
И что интересно, с этого момента как бы информация о том.
Information about.
Сколько нефти продается?
How
кому
much
продается,
oil
по
is
какой
being
цене
sold,
продается?
To whom and what price
она
that?
Практически стала закрыта.
It's practically being closed.
Если раньше проводились какие-то тендеры,
if
мы,
в частности,
мы сообщали, что проведен
we spoke about the tender.
Какая-то компания, значит, закупила в Азербайджане
that company got that amount of oil from Azerbaijan. Today we practically don't have that information either.
Информация стала более закрытой.
Information is being closed now.
Особенно, опять говорю,
became closed now, more closed now.
Сколько и за сколько продали?
To whom, for how much, and what was that money that spent?
Второе,
we don't know.
И второе,
and the second, what's important?
Деньги, которые поступают
the money that
в бюджет.
Are going to the budget from oil sales.
Куда уходят эти деньги?
Where does the money go?
То есть прозрачность бюджета.
We don't have the transparency of the budget.
Сильно деформировано.
It's very much deformed.
Дорога стоимостью, скажем, предположим, в $1 строится за $10.
Road that is $1 is being built for $10.
Обустройство столицы и реконструкции
разных дорог и так далее. The capital and the roads in it.
Огромные деньги.
Huge money is being spent. We don't know where this money goes.
То есть главная проблема именно заключается
здесь. The main problem
вот
is I see is here.
То есть на всех, скажем, этапах продажи нефти.
On every step of sales and income expenditures of sales, we have huge problems here. And it's correct. We have investigations that are being held. Certain information is released. But the full picture about the situation we practically don't have in society. That's one part of the problem. The other part of the problem, we're talking about the role of media.
Медиа, мы,
media,
опять я говорю, что на 99% куплено.
90% is bought.
Влияние медиа сегодня
the influence of media is quite
те,
weak.
Медиа,
but that media
that
call themselves independent, in opposition, those media, they don't give that
они
information.
Говорят,
they just talk.
Есть проблемы между
they say that they have problems
сегодня.
Between
Завтра
two ministers today, tomorrow, in newspapers, we see a different problem between other ministers. They write about phantom events inside of power.
Но реальные
but the real
investigation,
real information about the real situation, we don't get it. Even if we as an agency give that information, I assure you that newspapers won't give that information to you.
Цензура, мощный контроль,
censorship, huge control, etc., etc. That's a huge problem today.
Конечно, здесь
sure, we,
определенную роль, важную роль могут сыграть альтернативные
sure,
медиа.
Alternative media
internet,
can play an important role. Internet,
принципе,
this is what we see today on the basics.
Да. Но в плане того, что контроля
control,
традиционной медиа,
of traditional,
гражданского общества
media,
и так далее,
civil society, etc.,
достаточно сегодня, я считаю, что слабый.
Is quite weak today, I think.
Mr. Mehman Aliyev, you said that there's censorship. Is there as such a formal institute still of the censor that is preventing reporting about the oil business and so on, or is it censura, самоцензура, you know, self-censorship?
Серьезная цензура? На,
как это выглядит? Как это происходит? Explain how that comes about.
Это происходит очень просто.
What happens, it happens in simple.
То есть у нас средства массовой информации не могут зарабатывать
деньги. Our media cannot earn money themselves.
Главный доход, традиционный главный доход медиа – это реклама.
Of media is advertising.
У нас рекламный рынок с печатных СМИ,
advertising,
газет, составляет
of,
порядка
newspapers,
2 миллионов максимум в год.
Millions
за год.
A year.
У нас 30 ежедневных газет.
30 newspapers, this is a number we have. Or daily newspapers.
55 газет ежедневно.
Weeklies.
И где-то приблизительно 60 газет, это которые выходят в неделю два раза.
That run twice a week.
Это
That's
в целом около 150 газет
It's
в Азербайджане.
It's 150 newspapers in Azerbaijan, all in all.
Общий тираж газет в
An
месяц порядка около 4 миллионов.
4 million
всех газет.
Of all newspapers.
Там правительственные, проправительственные.
Governmental,
И уверяю вас, что на 2 миллиона
долларов
за один год
For 1 year,
продержать эти газеты практически
to keep these newspapers on,
я уже не говорю агентства,
alive
сайты,
is impossible. I don't speak about agencies and websites.
Так, откуда деньги?
Where do you get the money from?
Тиражи газет 1500.
The printouts of the newspapers 3,500.
No
Who pays? He plays the music.
То есть им четко дают.
They give
указания, о чем писать,
precise
о чем не писать,
directives, what they, are, should, what they should write about, what questions should be raised. And again, those who are considered opposing themselves, they say, okay, we talk about everything, but they speak about rumors, spread the rumors, insider information in the power, etc. Of some problems with opposition and some other, but nothing is said by them about the real situation in the country. Be that the chemical industry, construction, oil, anything. What is real the situation? What is the real economical situation? Control. Nothing. You can see nothing about this in newspapers.
So it's self-censorship.
Through yeah, but
advertising.
Yeah, through advertising, and there is a form of the traditional censorship, like the modified form. After the ANS TV channel had been seized from the frequency, and then they returned to the air, they got a new member of the team. Appointed by the presidential administration, the person just sits in the newsroom and he's actually doing a censorship. I remember the time when we had the censorship and we used to take our newsprints to the censor to stamp it. And he does basically the same with the TV programming in ANS. And yes, but it's not officially, it's not like legally somehow shaped. It's just, but all my fellow journalists in ANS TV channel, they call him censor. So they say he is a censor.
Elmar Shakhtakhtinsky, Azerbaijani Americans for Democracy. I want to ask a question about specific, what would you like other countries, United States government in particular, on a more official level in terms of relations, building relations with Azerbaijani government, how can it help or hurt free media in Azerbaijan? What do you see for where foreign governments from European Union or Council of Europe, United States government, how did it fail or how did it help free media? And in not just in general terms, but specifically from inside of Azerbaijan, what's impactful in those actions of foreign governments that can actually really help, not just in general image-wise?
Basically, my answer is they have to stop pleasing our government. Because if we just look at the statistics, In 2001, when Azerbaijan became a member of Council of Europe, it was partly free country according to Freedom House. In 2008, according to 2008 report, it's non-free. So 7 years of membership in the Council of Europe, the organization that is based on human rights and democracy values, didn't help the country to improve its records, didn't help the country to reform itself towards democracy. And why does it happen? Let's see what happened since then with OSCE, Council of Europe. All organizations that have offices in Azerbaijan, their representatives inside Azerbaijan are now just trying to please the government and not annoy them. That is visible. You know, when now journalists even don't think about calling to OSCE for comment when people get arrested. You know, because there is no answer from them. They don't react. They don't respond to these issues. They always speak about the quiet diplomacy that, according to them, helps a lot to get things done. But I haven't heard about anything that I always ask them questions. First question: do you think quiet diplomacy is better than the loud one? He says yes. It definitely helps to get things done. Then can you give me one example when it helped? No, it just doesn't. The answer doesn't come. So what they do is just for example, Council of Europe again. What we see in Council of Europe in 2001, they deprived Russia. It was 2001, I guess. They deprived Russia of voting right because of Chechnya. And now Russia invaded Georgia. There is no sound from Council of Europe. Why? Because gas is ruling Council of Europe. So it's they betrayed their own standards. They betrayed their own values. So what you are asking from Middle East monarchies? Sorry.
In the meantime, you know, of course what Hadija said is correct and true, but coming back to the U.S. position, etc., I mean, we should be also objective, you know. There is no example where loud diplomacy also helps in case of Azerbaijan now, because we should take into consideration that the government became much more resistible to the any foreign pressure. You know, that's also the case, because I mean, U.S. government, I was inside that talks as IRX Media Project employer. When Azadov Radio were the issue were hot, I mean, they're taking license. I mean, the U.S. government tried hard, I think. I don't know how much hard, but they tried not to allow that. They failed. I mean, yes, with Emin Adnan case, there are statements from the State Department, from the U.S. Embassy in Baku, etc. So they do issue statements, but it didn't help, you know. And the case again, I mean, it depends on how country is resistible. For example, under Andijan events, we all know what happened with Uzbek government. Ambassadors were called back, the criticism was strong enough, international criticism, etc. But what happened, the country became even more closer after that time, and closer to Russia. So, I mean, what Khadija said is correct and true. That's true, of course, but in the meantime, there is a factor that the government now is much more resistible to the international pressure. That's also a fact we should take into consideration.
Some experts call it resource nationalism.
Resource nationalism, exactly. And also, yes, and geopolitics matters, yeah? That's true. Gas matters. You cannot expect that, I mean, U.S. government will, for example, or European Union will forget about this interest in Azerbaijan. They will not, of course. It's one of the interests. And in the meantime, there is no guarantee that wilder pressure will not make country even more closer and regime even more repressive. I cannot say that. I mean, guarantee that, you know. That's also a problem. But in the meantime, yes, they should stop. For example, with Belarus, it worked. I mean, I don't see difference between, for example, the regime type in Belarus and in Azerbaijan. Maybe regime in Azerbaijan even more authoritarian than Belarusian one, you know. But, for example, Belarusian ministers are not able to travel to Europe. They are not. Lukashenko is not welcomed in Berlin and London by a queen, etc. Aliyev is. So that, of course, shouldn't be like that. But, you know, the reality, there is real politics as well.
I was asking more for concrete actions foreign governments can do. I think you came to that point real close. It's not about whether loud pressure or backdoor pressure works, but how dependent, I mean, with Uzbekistan, it's a different issue. I mean, Uzbekistan gave up all relation, all image. I mean, it's obviously that that government doesn't care. It's happy being next to Turkmenistan or North Korea, they don't care. How sensitive is Azerbaijani government? But Ilham Aliyev tried to bring around the world. How important is it to him? Can a threat of him losing that fake democracy status that he has now, completely exposing and being called what actually it is, can it be a credible leverage that
yes,
West can use? That's what
definitely.
That
I talked recently with people from Belarus, they're democracy activists, and they admitted that the fact that EU kind of sanctioned the leaders of Belarus, Lukashenko and others, deprived them of traveling to Europe, US visas, etc., it worked. And it made the government more open, more, I mean, and I'm sure that it will help in case of Azerbaijan. I'm not sure the West will do that, and yeah, you also, I'm sure, not sure about that, you know, but it will definitely help, because for regime, it's very important that Aliyev still, like, invited and welcomed in Berlin, in Washington, in London, and everywhere. It's very important for them.
I think it's even more important for Azerbaijani authorities and for Belarusian, because Azerbaijani authorities, they have more money to spend in Europe than
sure.
Belarusian ones. So I think they will be more upset because they will not be able to travel to their villas in Karlovy Vary and places like there like that. So I think. I agree.
No question to that. But the
it
matter
hurts.
Is how to do that. You know?
I would be upset as well.
This was somehow related to the question I was going to ask. I'll have to disagree with Khadija. We, for some reason, rely on international organizations for the things we are failing at home. For instance, I think we don't have more committed, willing organizations that will, in your case, support media in Azerbaijan. And the question I have, the statements from all those international organizations have been pretty harsh, and the report specifically Freedom House, which listed Azerbaijan as not a free country. My question is, you have numerous presidents of your colleagues been arrested, persecuted, or murdered in 2005. But instead of relying on international organizations or their statements, that will be a perfect finish. But what do you have in Azerbaijan to work in this, let's say you have a crisis, your colleagues have been detained or arrested. Like, what would be the procedure? What would you do?
What would I personally do? I would report about it. That is what I would do, and that is what we are doing, because my job is reporting. There are organizations, there are human rights organizations, the media rights organizations that are dealing with the legal support to the and financial support to the families. By the way, OSI is funding one of the organizations that are supporting the families of arrested journalists. And so there are organizations that are doing some work, but again, it's not enough to take them out of the prison. You need to have a political decision come out, and this political decision doesn't come under influence of the bottom.
No, what I specifically meant, for instance, Mehmet Aliyev is a media captain in Azerbaijan, as well as you are. So my question, to be specific, outside your job duty, what are you prepared to do in these cases? Which, I mean, you have numerous precedents. I mean, you have arrests. Yeah, that is. I mean, it's expected. It's most likely
so
to happen.
So what will I do?
Outside you, I mean, is there any organization, any committee that is set up for this kind of crises?
Yes, there is. There is an Institute for Reporters' Freedom and Safety, there are, which works with all international organizations that is working as actually organizing some support actions inside the country. But again, when you have a media environment where the 90% of the editors are bought out, so you can't talk much about the solidarity of the media organizations. It's not something to talk about. So there are a few left that are not bought and are not suppressed enough to stop doing things.
I'll try to be more specific. Outside your job duty, I mean, not covering it. That's not what I meant. Like trying to get them out of jail.
I can't blow the prison, you know. It's prison door.
No, I.
So.
All right.
would I go to the rally? Yeah. If there will be, yes, I would. So, but I mean. I'm going to the every court trial of the bloggers. I mean, when Elmar Huseynov was killed, there were like thousands in the street. But someone needs to be killed so thousands go to the street. Oh, okay. It's the statistics shows that the rate of the solved case of the crimes against journalists is 0%. So journalists go to the court, they file complaints about the attacks on them and so on. They have lawyers. The cases go to the European Court and so on, but it's okay. It doesn't help. You know, the government it has its own agenda. You know, it's not. What would people do? What is your leverage against the government? You would criticize it, and people wouldn't vote for it, but our government doesn't care. It doesn't count votes. So there is no leverage we can use against the government. a lot of cases, but I
would not. Current would there about 10 concerning media. Yeah, about 10 at least, like waiting for the consideration of the court.
Вы знаете, та ситуация, которая сегодня сложилась, когда мы говорим о
защите,
скажем, журналистов,
about protection of journalists,
она не сложилась так сразу, вдруг.
We didn't get the situation just like this immediately.
В 90-е годы, скажем, мы создали так называемый совет редакторов.
We created so-called Council of Editors.
Это была такая организация, которая не была зарегистрирована, ничего. Мы собирались обычно в чрезвычайных
ситуациях.
Это могло быть и физическое насилие против журналистов, это могло быть судебный
процесс,
это могло принятие каких-то решений правительства, касающихся чисто экономических проблем с
мире, то есть, например, повышение цен на бумагу, raising prices for paper, printing factories, problems of distributing of printed media.
И мы в соответствии с ситуацией принимали решения, предположим, проведение каких-то акций, пикетов, митингов, или же, так сказать, совместно делали какие-то акции в газетах,
unanimous action in newspapers,
да, совместно делали статьи, там,
articles,
или, скажем, может быть, какая-то полоса газеты выходила
пустая,
вообще без ничего.
We had just a page free of any information whatsoever. Blank page. As a result of this policy of suppressing bribery, etc., step by step, the Council of Editors, practically two years ago, it was the last time when we got together. We had a meeting on the eve of.
Уже тогда было очень трудно собрать туда каких-то людей. То есть приходило где-то порядка 4-5 редакторов. It was hard to collect those
people. Normally we had 5-4 editors that showed up. Moreover.
В последнее время мы как бы вынуждены были привлечь еще и правозащитные организации. Но даже, я вам скажу такую вещь, даже мы практически силой вытаскивали правозащитников на улицу.
We had to took the human rights activists by force to the streets.
То есть я был одним из тех, кто участвовал во всех пикетах, во всех акциях.
Who participated in all rallies and meetings, the most recent ones.
То есть просто было видно,
simply,
что
you could see that
many
don't want to participate.
У них, я считаю, что были уже согласованы.
I think they had a certain project arranged with the government,
далее,
their own decisions, etc., etc., etc.
Практически просто вот я
we
вам
are
так,
being
что
left
вокруг никого нет.
Alone, without any support.
И сегодня это реальная ситуация.
And today that's the real situation that, again, we talk about bloggers.
Гражданское общество, я
считаю, civil society, I think,
не реагирует на эту
ситуацию. Is not reacting to the situation. The protests,
они больше импульсивны,
they are more impulsive. They are more from the foreign support. Washington, London, other cities, where students made certain actions. But in Azerbaijan itself, we don't see that.
То есть это реальная ситуация.
That's the real situation.
И здесь во многом свою роль сыграла вот я
предательство международных
организаций.
We see the betrayal of the international organization here. We see this element, formal attitude.
А в последние годы,
and in recent years,
год, даже я вам скажу, что заметно,
in the last years, what is noticeable, the European Council and OSCE, all of those, they are trying to distance themselves from these problems.
Я даже вам одну вещь скажу, что на встречу с Харашти,
with Harashti, when I saw him,
меня из списка вычеркнули.
I was crossed out from the list of people to speak with him.
И это потом было представлено как недоразумение.
And that was just a nuisance.
Харашти был удивлен, что
as
потом меня не было на встрече.
Harashti was surprised to not to see me in the meeting.
А сделали в самом стафе внутри офиса.
But in the staff of OSCE offices was done. I was crossed in their staff. It shows that internal Baku office is under control. The same thing are applicable to the European Council.
Emin Hasanov, well, I have a question about more, to be more specific about the alternative forms of media. I had an opportunity to meet with Emin Milli when during his multiple visits to New York City, and he had a vision, and that vision of an of alternative media. We all touch the issues as how the media is being suppressed in Azerbaijan, how everybody is being bought. And but under that circumstances, and we had a long conversation about the alternative media, and he had a vision of special as IN network and how to develop this in this project in Azerbaijan. But unfortunately, after the arrest of Emin Milli, I haven't heard a lot of things. And my question is to Khadija Khanum. And what is Radio Liberty, to be more specifically, is doing in order to train people, to provide them with necessary tools for alternative media? Because even during the arrest of Emin Milli, before and after, we saw a lot of solidarity among the young people. Young people supporting, young people solidarity online and posting different videos. But my personal perspective, the lacking, having more structurized form of solidarity, more structurized form of putting things in a more presentable ways for the media. What Radio Liberty is doing to provide these young people, activists, citizens, with the necessary tools, equipment, or trainings, or things like that?
Actually, the ideas of what I can tell you about these on network and its new media activities, they actually are going on, and they are about to launch, or they already launched the web page of ANTV. They were going to do it this week, which is citizen journalism tool to that was based on. They trained like some people, and I personally was a trainer in their project, invited as a trainer in their project. We trained some 15 people who would do the citizen journalism for this web page, but it's their project. What Radio Azadlik does, we have interactive tools. We have this mobile reporter thing in our webpage, and every day we receive something interesting on that tool. So people shoot how the police is being bribed and send it to us. It's just ordinary citizens of Azerbaijan. They send us a video and asks to put it on the web page. They shoot interesting things throughout the city, if it's photo or video. Or the most recent one, it was about the transportation inspectors beating up the Azeri citizen, and we could prove that he was beaten to death because of the citizen journalism tool in our webpage. Someone sent us a video he has taken from the site, so showing that he didn't attack anyone. He was attacked by the transportation inspectors. And so this is how the citizens, like Emin Milli himself and the people who had been trained under his projects, are helping us to deliver the truth. Also, there are youth activists writing blogs for our webpage, and they are quite popular. Like, I wouldn't say Radio Azadlik is doing something for them, or saying we are actually enjoying this young minds contributing to our webpage, and thus increasing the popularity and young audience of the radio. So basically, we do what we do, and there are projects that are coming up, but I don't want to announce them before they are.
I think we have time for exactly one more question.
Dean Kemp from Harris Interactive. Besides reporting, do you have much leeway in terms of either doing public opinion polls for yourself, or to be able to pick up and report on anything that NGOs or other groups may be sponsoring? And a second quick question, In terms of religious freedom, is there anything going on in terms of public coverage of that?
Okay. I can tell about both issues because I've been covering both. So with the first was about survey. We have a rule. We don't report about the survey results that we don't if we don't know about the funding, who paid for it. That's an interesting thing because especially before the elections, the gongos that Mr. Aliyev was talking about, gongos are government-organized NGOs. The organization, which's name is Association for Civil Society Development in Azerbaijan. Great name. They come up with the survey results that Ilham Aliyev is a leader in, and everyone likes his policy. Then they come up with the American Observers Group. They bring American observers to Azerbaijan to monitor elections, and they say they haven't seen any violation in the polling stations. Then they bring some European MPs before the referendum to tell that actually limitless presidency is a good thing, and if there would be limitless presidency during Clinton's time, then Mr. Bush wouldn't become a president and wouldn't bomb Iraq. So that's a direct quote, actually. That's what the German MP said. So this organization, what they are doing, they are bribing international observers to come and give an international approval to the government projects, or they come up with survey results that news stories would be based on. What we do then? What we do is we ask the question, where the money comes from. Who did fund your survey? And when there is no answer, we either don't report about it or report saying these guys are hiding their financial sources. And actually, this helped us with the one case. We've been following this Association for Civil Society Development in Azerbaijan in all their surveys, asking them if there is an open funding source for this project. So we didn't find. And then it turned out that Mr. Obama's pre-election campaign manager came to Azerbaijan invited by this association. And what he's supposed to do is give a speech in the university, Western University, and then meet our officials. And, you know, for the president of Azerbaijan and, like, for the officials in our country, the contacts with the U.S. leadership means a lot, and they use it a lot in internal propaganda. So they would be happy probably to say that Mr. Plovtun came with a special message from Mr. Obama. It was a personal visit. It had nothing to do with Mr. Obama, but everything depends on how you play with this information for the broader audience. So that is what was going on, and what we did, we just asked the question where the money comes from, who is paying for the visit, and we found out that it's this association. And I called to the university to ask who is organizing the event in the university. They said Association for Civil Society Development in Azerbaijan under the presidential administration. So that is what the lady in university said. So that is what was happening. And Mr. Plov, actually, he got honorarium, $50,000 for one speech in the university, and he gave it back. He didn't give it back. He donated it to National Democratic Institute after the story came out, and after he was like, we've been chasing him saying, like, do you know about the things happening in this country? Like, did you learn? And then he said that he was misguided. He didn't know who is inviting him, and he gave the money back to the National Democratic Institute. So we are, basically, we are not nice. So with the religious things, it's the latest news are the Muslims from southern regions of Azerbaijan applied to the president, asking to stop harassment of the religious figures and the stop demolition of mosques. Actually, the problems started, like not started, but it was aggravated. Situation was aggravated after August 17th when there was a blast in mosque. It's still not clear if the investigation was properly done and if those who are arrested under this charge are really ones to blame for this charge, for blasting the mosque. But after that, government got an excuse to close, shut down mosques throughout the city. And now all Sunni Muslims in Baku have to go to the one single mosque. They have only one mosque to go, and police doesn't allow them to sit outside, to pray outside the mosque. So there is always tension around this mosque. And the new when the government was about to pass the NGO law, there was actually number of laws to be amended, and one of those was about NGOs, and one of those was about the religious organizations. And it says that if more than five people are gathering together for religious activity, they have to they must officially register. This amendment gives the police excuse to arrest groups of people, to detain them, and give them a warrant that next time when they gather together, they will be arrested for a long time. There are a lot of criminal cases against so-called radicals, alleged radicals, who and here I think the media has a responsibility in this too, because whenever the Minister of National Security issues a statement about another operation and they caught, for example, group of Hezbollah, something, guerrillas, media just takes the report and publishes it as it is. They never check the information out, whether it's really, really all 20 people arrested are Hezbollah guerrillas, whether these people had something really to do with terroristic attacks. So maybe they did, but it's really not clear with most of the cases. And one of the journalists of bizim yoldan şey olan kim miydi? Ne. I can't remember his name. Natik Cavatlı. He got a prize recently for the investigation he did that revealed that at least two people among the group that had been arrested had nothing to do with terrorism, and they were not even, they haven't even been practicing Muslims. So they've been accused falsely, and they are still in a jail. So this is what is happening. It's easy to blame people, to put the labels on them, like call them Wahhabis, or say they are like Hezbollah guerrillas. But normally it's normally these things are not transparent, and we don't know about if human rights are being abused. So Radio Liberty has reported about many cases when people had been forced forcefully taken to the police station and being shaved there forcefully. So these things are happening as well. But at the same time, we have to there is a trend in the country that the country is becoming more and more religious. In one glance to the city center, to not only center, in outskirts and the center, is enough to see how many Muslim shops there are. And there were no Muslim shops before in Baku, and now you can see many in one street. So people are becoming more and more religious, and this whatever this policy is aimed at, but if it's making people religiously passive, it doesn't work. No, sorry.
That's okay. Thanks. We're now actually just a bit over time, and I have to say I'm greatly enjoying the conversation, and not once again wanting to impose any limits on speech, but nonetheless, we are over time. So I think we're going to need to wrap up. I just wanted to ask, though, briefly, Mihman Malim or Shahin, if either of you had any final comments you wanted to say, maybe about a minute or so each, in response to any of the issues that have come up, or if not.
The
only thing I would like to say is a little bit about about the future.
Конечно же, правительство будет
sure, the government is going to try to continue
усиливать контроль над медиа,
to empower the control over the media,
над интернетом,
of internet.
То есть будет делаться все для того,
try its best to regulate and limit
возможность граждан получать
opportunities
of
citizens to receive truthful, well-balanced and true information about that is real, that real, that reflects the situation in real.
И главное не допустить, чтобы
медиа
выполняли роль
not to allow that media would play the function of the watchdog, correct, of the government over the authorities. Government is the most threat in this situation, the threat to the transparency.
Но как мы видим, ситуация развивается таким образом, что
the situation is evolving in the light of possibilities of new technological conditions.
Они просто спонтанно,
they are spontaneous, I would say, throw to the market new resources.
И появляются новые совершенно
люди, and we see new, completely new people, new possibilities and opportunities.
Думаю,
I think that
предотвратить этот процесс практически становится невозможным.
To hinder anything from this process is totally impossible.
Даже события в Иране показали,
even the Iranian situation and events showed that so-called civil journalism and new technologies,
они позволили,
they allowed
сообщать миру
to report to the world what is real happening in Iran, and the government had was taken aback that and was crazy that information went out of the boundaries, the closed society as Iran is today. The new situation shows this policy that is underway in Azerbaijan has no prospect, and I think that
вот это независимая журналистика,
independent journalism,
нетрадиционная,
non-traditional journalism,
она будет развиваться,
is going to develop.
Мне так кажется,
and I think I'm optimistically looking at the situation. The government in the long run will lose this war.
Yeah, the same what Mehman said, that yeah, situation as bad as it is, but doesn't mean we should give up and people are not give up, and you know, just one issue, one more issue. As I know, the government is now very concerned with. They have now rating results, AGB Nielsen and other ratings result on TV viewers, and they are very concerned that the level of people, the number of people who are watching local TV channels, eight local nation TV channels is drastically going down, you know, with the development of people just don't watch them, you know, and so while these channels, some of them are just like meme for the government propaganda. So, and the government is very unhappy with that, and they don't know what to do with that, because in the regions, 90% households, according to statistics, have satellite dishes, and in Baku, the number of subscribers of cable TVs is growing, just blowing, you know. So it shows that the government's propaganda doesn't work, and alternative media will develop, Facebook, you know, web journalism, etc. So everything will be okay, I think. I mean, the media will survive, and Turan is still alive and working, Radio Azadlık is working, so everything will be fine, I hope. Just thank you.
Thanks for ending on that note of optimism, Shaheen and Mihman. So with that, there's nothing left to do but to thank very deeply our three panelists for, first of all, making the very long journey from Baku to New York. Secondly, doing so on Eid and by giving up their holiday time to be here with us. So thank you very much.